2021 at Universal Studios at Universal Orlando Resort.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Smart Clock Podcast is back once again. It doesn't bother me. I'm sure it bothers a lot of the 15-year-old marks on Twitter and Facebook.
Well, how about a Y2J telling you to shut the hell up?
34 Boulevard Road. I don't know where I am. I'm so lost and afraid and alone. You can see Vince's greasy little fingerprints all over this segment.
This has turned into nothing more than a handicap match!
I don't respect you, Dexter, and I intend to beat you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Week in the Universe Part 1, where we discuss Raw and SmackDown, red and blue brands combined. I am your host, Amir Ozzanelli, and joining me this week, as ever, is the newly housed Steve Neal.
Hello, mate. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you, sir. How are you keeping?
Yeah, very good, mate. I'm a bit sore, a bit stiff after the move, mate, but I am all good, and I'm always stiff when I'm talking to you, baby.
Oh, you naughty sauce pot. Speaking of which, someone just dropped a pot.
That was me dropping a coaster because I live in a new house and I treat my furniture with dignity.
Yes, we are British. And in British housing, we use coasters, you filthy American animals.
Definitely, baby.
Shall we get on with it, sir, and jump into Raw head first?
Oh, yes. Let's do it, mate. Let's do it.
Because I'm the Miz, and I'm awesome! You won't give me the competition I want, and I'll come get it myself!
My name is Paul Heyman. This is my yard now.
Raw this week, the Road to No Mercy has finally made its last pit stop on the way to the Staples Center in LA. The main highlight for me was Roman Reigns and what is, in my opinion, his greatest ever piece of microphone work. Roman Reigns comes out, trashes John Cena, uses the Rock material, shows that video from the lead into what I believe was WrestleMania 28 in Miami. And then calls him a fake-ass bitch and even drops the S-bomb. Says that John Cena talks a lot of shit. And my TV conveniently cut out as soon as he said shit. I was like, Like, Vince McMahon pressed the dump button of all dump buttons for that moment. What did you think of the promo, mate?
Yeah, it's a great promo. It's shocking to sit here and have to praise Roman Reigns. It's not something we make a habit out of doing. And that's because Roman Reigns generally is a steaming pile of garbage. But he was excellent. He did exactly what we said to do. So Roman has been obviously tuning into the Smart Plug. He's heard my dulcet tones, which are far more pleasant on the ears than those of Dexter fucking Critchman. What? But he has gone and used exactly what I said. Reference the Rock material. Reference the fact that John Cena is a hypocrite from what he was saying in the rivalry with the Rock. Back in 2012, we've got memories that go back 5 years. Let's use that material because there's comedy gold in there. There's impact in there. And it's easy. It's easy material for Roman to go to. He doesn't have to use too much of his imagination or creativity, areas that he is not exactly strong on. Might get him over with the crowd as well to kind of name drop a little bit the people's champ. He did that and it worked. It worked for him. Shock, shock, horror. I know more than Roman Reigns when it comes to the wrestling business. But it entirely worked. It was a great promo. It was used in a very succinct way, in a very accurate, and the timing of it was great. His delivery was great. And I love the fact that he used it when John Cena wasn't there. And he used John Cena's go-home line from the tape as well. It's just a really, really good, solid, entertaining promo. And that's just, I know that Roman is the guy who does his talking in the ring with his two moves of doom and all that. And that's fine. That's who he is. That's what he is. But it's great to see him add just a little bit of something on the mic, because the potential is there for him to be good on the mic. I know a lot of guys say backstage he's someone who's very funny. When you see him out of character, away from wrestling programming, he's, you know, when he's relaxed, he's quite a funny guy. You know, he seems quite chilled. He's got a lot of one-liners. He likes to make jokes. He's got a bit of a reputation of that among the boys and girls backstage. But we just don't get to see that come from him on kind of WWE camera, if you like. So it's great to get at least a little bit of an allusion to the real Roman Reigns, as it were. So, yeah, really, really enjoyable. And I know that you were... maybe even got a little flicker of a semi for Roman Reigns this week.
Yeah, rather shamefully, I came away from this segment loving it. I adored Roman Reigns in this segment. This is the most I've ever enjoyed. I've at least admitted to people, because I get banged on a lot for ripping on Roman Reigns on Twitter and stuff, and I've admitted that he actually has had a great year, and he's had great matches, and arguably he had the feud of the year with Braun Strowman. You know, I'm... thinking back and thinking, are there any other feuds this year that have really ignited my passion for wrestling, like him and Braun? More so on Braun's side than him, but still, nonetheless, he's been very good. And this, I just came away from it thinking, please, please be like this every week. Yeah, your wrestling's never going to be fantastic. You're a good seller, you're a decent bumper, and we can work around that. But if you deliver these kind of promos every week with this kind of cutting aggression and almost like a flippant arrogance about you, like a semi-heel, brilliant stuff. Absolutely brilliant. We saw Roman Reigns the man this week, as opposed to Roman Reigns the creation of Vince McMahon. It was an entirely different prospect. And, you know, our friends at Global Canvas Club tweeted out that they felt that this was the best Roman has ever been. In ring, nothing hindering him. The crowd zoned in on him. And the funny thing is, the crowd were really booing him quite heavily at the beginning. And he actually got a sizable portion of the crowd to at least acknowledge, you know, that's actually quite good, mate. Fair enough. And by the end of it, people were like, that's pretty badass. And there is a fair amount of validity to what he's saying that goes with the shoot premise of the promos that they've been doing, because John Cena is always banging on about, hey, you know, I'm here for the fans and all that. And it's like, dickhead, you're not here. Roman Reigns is. And for that reason, like, I genuinely feel like I'm leaning towards Roman Reigns and supporting him in this match more so than I am John Cena. So, you know, I guess Roman Reigns from that side of things is doing a great job. So credit to him.
Definitely. I agree. I'd prefer Reigns to... I mean, I think Reigns will win. I think Reigns has to win.
Yeah.
But I would rather he won as well. I just don't... It would really irritate me if Cena won, because, as you say, Reigns on a great run. He's had a great year without always needing to be involved in the title. They've shown that he can have main event rivalries that have nothing to do with the belt. And he's carried that very, very, very well. With the Braun Strowman rivalry in particular. He's had really good matches over the course of the last 10 months, more consistently than he has done. He's improving. He's still pretty young, really. And as a top guy, he's still fairly new. I know that, you know, I think it was Jericho said, it takes 6 or 7 years before you really hit your stride. He felt that it took him 6 or 7 years before he felt like, oh, okay, that's what I'm supposed to do, and this is who I'm supposed to be, and this is who I am. Roman Reigns is still, you know, within that time frame. And John Cena, there's no point in winning. He's far more hated for me for far longer a time than Roman Reigns. So yeah, let's see how it goes. Hopefully they don't put on the terrible match that it threatens to be and actually pull out a classic that they are capable of, at least.
Before we jump headfirst in with the interaction, what was your other major takeaway from Raw?
Well, I really enjoyed, you know, there was some okay, you know, matches and segments through the course. I mean, it's either got to be The Miz and the fact that yet again he is the MVP of Raw with the phenomenal heel promo work on Kurt Angle and Jason Jordan through the course of the night, really. He was kind of the person that keeps getting cut away to. And the fact that he's almost responding to what people are saying on social media, us included, that he is carrying the show. I love the fact that he's referencing that, that reality. Other than that, I guess it would be what's going on with the women's division in terms of Nia Jax beating Alexa Bliss, going into, obviously, No Mercy, and the fact that that women's title match has now been changed to a Fatal 5-Way because of the return of Bayley, which I'm not particularly excited about. I think it's a bit too soon. I think it would have been good for her to spend longer away. And the fact that we've seen her most weeks in some form of segment as well means that we've not had the chance to really miss Bayley in a lot of ways. I'd rather have seen kind of Asuka come in before Bayley on Raw, to be honest. But those were probably the other two main talking points, I would say, from Raw for me this week.
Yeah, I mean, it summed up really what was wrong with Raw for us. It felt quite slim. The six-pack challenge, which was the main event, for me was not a incredibly strong effort. It was a fun match for what it was. But much like last week, you threw a lot of mid-carders in, and it just felt a little bit eh. Yeah, it just didn't feel like a main event. It just felt like, you know, that if anything, that was an opener to Raw. Maybe it would have been better to have, you know, could you not have? This is the final show, and Braun Strowman and Brock Lesnar are essentially limited to a via satellite conversation. Like, seriously, you couldn't turn up and just fucking try and beat the shit out of each other for 5 minutes? And that could have been your main event, having those two being separated? That would have been far more impactful for me. There are only really a couple of takeaways-wise. Obviously, you know, the women's event, which our listeners actually took quite a great interest in. It was nice to see Bayley back, but frankly, I think they made a big mistake just ram-raiding her into this match for the sake of it. Very strange to just kind of thrust her in there for no apparent reason. Also, I felt that the women, when they were attacking Nia Jax, came across as quite heelish. There was a real kind of, I get the idea was, oh, you know, we need to work together to take down Nia Jax. All the faces came across as heels in that segment for me. If I just tuned in and I had no emotional interaction or interest in any of them, I would have thought, okay, why are they bullying that woman because she's larger? That's basically all I got from this segment, was just a cheap shit mentality from the faces. I felt that it made them look quite poor, and Sasha Banks looked like an incredibly obnoxious character once again. She comes down and she sort of, you know, she stops Alexa Bliss from leaving. Nia Jax takes out Alexa Bliss, and Sasha's like, no, you do what you please, and then jumps her from behind like a complete obnoxious heel, doing the ratty sort of heelish small time, almost like the Enzo Amore kind of thing, you know, jumping on the back and sort of scrapping away, and gets dumped on her ass, and then Bayley comes down to help her, and they all work together. I don't know. It left quite a bit of taste in my mouth. I didn't enjoy it. The tag team division, though, was quite funny. I'm really enjoying Raw's tag team division right now, actually. I think now that they're starting to realise that the club are good and they're starting to wing them into more and more of these segments, it's actually becoming a more legitimate tag team division. And it's starting to get that feel. It's not on the level with SmackDown's right now, for my money, at least with the main event angles that the New Day and the Usos are providing us. But we're getting closer to it. They're building towards something nice. I just hope that they're not going to, you know, shove the club aside once they're done with the bar and the Shield kind of stuff. Hopefully we're going to get a continuation and the club are finally going to come to fruition, because newsflash, the club are entertaining as fuck.
Love the club. They're probably the most entertaining thing in the Raw tag team division right now for pure entertainment, I would say.
Yeah, they're funny.
Yeah, God, yeah. And I think the thing of the Shield being back together, I think that kind of novelty is worn off now. They're a very good tag team. There's no doubt in that. You know, it's obvious. They work together in a very good way. I enjoy watching their tag matches, and we both obviously love the bar. But the club are, you know, worthy of being in their company. If, you know, very, very comfortable in that company for me. So hopefully they won't just kind of shut it down, or, as you say, push them out the way because they want to put the Hardys back in there, because for whatever reason, they've maybe not got too many other things going on with the Hardy Boys or whatever. Hopefully, the club stay nice and relevant in that division.
Yeah, I just want them to be used properly. As somebody who's dedicated a large portion of my life to watching them on the indies, their rise in New Japan, the fact that they had their own podcast in Talking Shop, there's so much character, so much comedic elements to what they do, and frankly, it would be criminal not to utilize them in the correct manner. Going back to the women's division, at Taylor R 1114, our good friend Taylor Marie wants to know, when do you see Paige returning and what brand do you think she'll come into?
I think it's quite soon. She's spent the last few days, hasn't she, at the Performance Center. So she's obviously...
Yes, she has.
Very close to a return, which is great news. I see that happening very soon. The obvious choice is obviously to send her to Raw because that's the bigger of the shows and is a huge deal having Paige back. I think this depends on Vince because I can see her going literally anywhere. I can see her going back in NXT level. That would not shock me if Vince is in a sort of a Punisher mode. It would, I think, in a lot of ways, SmackDown could use her more because you've got Asuka going into Raw. You've got Bayley's return there as well. You've got Nia Jax on the up. You've got Emma getting a push. Their division looks very strong right now. And on SmackDown, we've been working with, to all intents and purposes, the same five women. Well, since WrestleMania, really. The same five women have been working on SmackDown. They've been doing a great job. They've been holding things together brilliantly, often better than Raw. But it could use an injection. It could use a fresh face going in there and a fresh threat coming in and someone new for those women to work with. So I would like to see her go on to SmackDown just for that refreshing of the women's division on the blue brand.
Yeah, I actually agree with you. People are going to say, oh, Xavier Woods is on their side. Can we please shut the fuck up about that and start acting like adults, please? I am quite frankly bored of hearing it. People have sort of said to me on Twitter, oh, but what about the Xavier Woods thing on team? He's like, shut up. Like, people don't have sex. Seriously, go and have sex and then shut the fuck up, please. It's really annoying me. It really is. Like, it's just, who cares? Who honestly gives a shit? I don't care who she fucks and what she does in her personal life because it's none of my goddamn business. And I think people should have... You know, what annoys me is the same people who are screaming about how she deserves respect are also the people dredging this shit up constantly on Twitter. Oh, I love Paige. Paige is amazing. Oh my God, did you see this link on fucking TMZ about what she did with Del Rio? And it's like, shut up. Shut up and pay attention to your own lives and become more fulfilled people before you start making judgments about people you don't even know. That's my little rant for the day. Paige to SmackDown, I think, simply because I feel Paige thrives off of better technical wrestlers. When she was having her best stuff, she was working with people who could work better. I think on the back end of things, before she got injured and before, you know, she kind of got disenchanted with wrestling, so to speak, she was wrestling people like Nikki Bella, who are absolutely fine. You know, Nikki Bella has improved no end and looked great at the back end of her career. But for me, someone like a Paige thrives when she's got someone who's a bit more hard-hitting. Paige versus Charlotte Flair, the way that Charlotte has now progressed and has evolved into such a world-class talent, that's going to help her out no end. It's going to help her thrive. She has a reputation for being quite, I wouldn't say lazy, but from what I've heard, people say she can be a bit of a sandbagger. You know, she sort of like won't sell as well for women that she might not think are on her level. On SmackDown, you're not going to have that problem because a lot of those women are actually personal friends of hers from what you can tell just from looking at social media or Instagram and stuff like that. She's becoming an older woman. She's becoming more wise to the world, so to speak, more knowledgeable. And, you know, people forget that Paige came up to the main roster at, what, 21? At 21, most of us are still desperately trying to find our feet in the world. Not everybody gets the opportunity to mature quickly. And even when they do, it's quite difficult for some people. We forget that. I think people need to pump the brakes a little bit and just remember how young she still is. She's still a very young woman. She's barely a grown woman, frankly, you know, in terms of the length of life that we're hoping she'll have. So just chill, stick her on SmackDown, then she's got plenty of content. And because, of course, you know, with Asuka going to Raw as well, it's kind of hard to see her making as, you know, more of a punch because she's quite a hard-hitting wrestler. She's quite physical. You know, she's got that typical British mentality, a bit more snug, you know, likes to sort of make sure those forearms are cinched in a little tighter, a bit stiffer. And on SmackDown, she's going to have a lot more leeway because she's going to have people like Natalya and Charlotte and Becky, ring veterans, so to speak, people who are going to be able to really get in there and mix it up with her. Whereas on Raw, it's more of a character-based thing, and even Asuka looks like she's going to be more of a character-driven assassin as opposed to just being this monstrously great technical Japanese wrestler. So that's my two cents, and so I guess me and you are kind of in agreement about that. You mentioned Miz. Taylor was very enamoured with The Miz this week, as I think all of us were, to be honest. Said that Miz's promo at the end of the six-pack challenge was epic. I did like the fact that they jumped Jason Jordan at the end and he kind of leered over him. I'm very fascinated by the choice of attire that Bo Dallas seems to have every week. That jacket, yowzers. Sometimes I feel like I need Bret Hart sunglasses when I'm looking at that guy. That is an incredible choice of jacket. But yeah, just... she's not the only one as well. I Love Clee 216 at I Love Clee 216, our good friend the GOAT. He felt that Raw was basically an homage to The Miz. He felt like this was kind of The Miz's show. He said the shoot promo era has begun and none are doing it better than The Miz. Another solid night on the mic and finally defending his title on a pay-per-view. About damn time The Miz got an entire show centered around the IC title. Last week, SmackDown cemented KO as its top heel. This week, Raw did the same with The Miz. Both of them were fantastic and proved Vince is right. Nothing funny about Miz's promos tonight. It was all about heat, and he got the job done as always. That's The Miz in a nutshell. He always gets the job done, and he gets it done fucking well. The Miz is the most reliable plumber you'll ever know. He's just phenomenal at getting things done. You want something done, you call The Miz. And how many times have I've been saying it for fucking months now on these podcasts. Who elevates talent better than The Miz? Nobody. Who gets a guy over better? Nobody. It is all about The Miz. People are now starting to realize that, holy shit, this guy is doing amazing work, not just for himself, but for people around him. Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel were in the main event of Raw this week. That speaks volumes about the credibility and the vibe that he brings to not only the wrestlers around him, but the locker room entirely. I feel like he's galvanizing Raw and he's at least leading the charge of Raw. And like I said last week, take The Miz out of Raw, I don't think I'm watching it. Or I'm not emotionally invested whatsoever.
Yeah, I think I can imagine that after the farce of SummerSlam and him being on the pre-show with no Intercontinental title involvement at all in that Miz Taraj versus kind of Hardy's, you know, all that bullshit, I can imagine it wasn't just him going and hammering on Vince's door saying, this is bullshit. What are you doing? Not only to the most prestigious mid-card title in the history of the business, but what are you doing to me? Not just your best mid-card talent, but arguably your best talent at the moment in terms of work I can do on the mic, in terms of being able to be a character, and in terms of elevating and putting over talent, win, lose or draw, people look great in rivalries with me and in matches with me. I can imagine that, you know, veterans like both Matt and Jeff Hardy were knocking on the door and saying exactly the same thing. What are you doing, you utter moron? Because since then, The Miz has been on absolute fire and has been given the platform to be on fire as well. So there's definitely been a change, a very noticeable change in attitude around The Miz and in terms of his involvement, which has just been great for us. And it's great to see that Jason Jordan's benefiting from it. I'm becoming more interested in Jason Jordan by the week, not because of the Kurt Angle stuff, because, you know, I don't really care about that, but in terms of him selling this kind of almost anger management problem that he's developed seemingly out of nowhere, I really enjoy the fact that basically they're saying The Miz is uniquely capable of pressing Jason Jordan's buttons where no one else has been able to before, because he's been kind of quite a cool character. I really, really like that. I think that's just... I'm interested in him. I wasn't really interested before. I'm interested in the ring, but not really interested in Jason Jordan, the character. But I'm becoming a little bit more curious and a little bit more interested now. And that's because of the great work of The Miz.
Yeah, one thing I will say for Jason Jordan and Kurt Angle, they were given a pile of shit for an angle. Nobody can tell me otherwise. That isn't a atrocious concept. Whoever came up with this storyline, like, that is the worst idea for shoehorning Jason Jordan into Raw. And the one thing I will say is it's garbage. It's not fun. But those two are working their bollocks off to try and make it semi-believable. I can see that in their backstage promo on Raw when he's arguing. He's like, how dare you, you know, you can't talk to my dad like that and stuff like that. Like, it felt semi-realistic. They were acting their bollocks off, basically, trying to make it feel semi-believable. Kurt Angle, you know, sells the emotion as best as he can. Kurt Angle has never been renowned for that level of seriousness in his promos. A lot of his stuff when he was serious was more about being the American machine as opposed to, you know, he's never really had to go into deep emotional family values with his angles. Yeah. Like the only it's other time that we really got a hint of that. Yeah. Like the other time we got, it was like the bestiality thing and nobody really wants to keep bringing that up. And to their credit, I feel like they're working on, but like you say, The Miz is getting better stuff out of Jason Jordan every week. Jason Jordan is getting emotionally aggressive towards The Miz. Yeah, I just feel like he has this, like you say, he has this incredible ability to push people's buttons. And I think when you look back at it, whenever you listen to old school wrestlers talking on podcasts, whether that be Talk is Jericho or a Stone Cold podcast, whether you look back at these Table for Free shows on the network, they all talk about how people got the best out of people when they forced them into a corner and they made them emotionally aggressive and essentially tried to make them feel like, you know what, this isn't just an angle. I genuinely get pissed off by you. And I can tell, and The Miz has mentioned this sometimes in his promo, people don't like him. I can tell certain people in that roster genuinely think this guy's a dickhead. But the one thing you can't deny is he's so good at his job. And by being a dickhead, he's bringing emotional response out of people. You watch the way Jason Jordan reacted to him in the ring, and he's just like, oh, look, here comes the bastard. You know, he's just so fucking rude and so obnoxious, and that is everything you want from a heel. The same way Kevin Owens isn't afraid to interact with fans and call them a piece of shit and call them out on Twitter and mock their looks when they say inappropriate and disgusting things about him. He has no filter when it comes to being a heel. A great heel will go to any lengths to make people angry and have a level of disgust for them. And that's what The Miz has done. The Miz is textbook heel. And I guarantee in 20, 30 years time, people are going to be looking at him and saying, this guy, holy fucking shit. Like, this guy really set a new benchmark for what it was to be a heel. Or at least in my opinion. If I'm still around in that time, I will be looking back and saying, when I was a kid, when I was young, when I was in my early 30s, you know, The Miz was the guy. The Miz was the guy that everybody thought, you know, very much in the way that Ric Flair was considered that great heel of the NWA days. People of an elder generation I've spoken to who love wrestling, they go back to people like Ric Flair. And they say, oh, you know, you should have seen Jerry Lawler in Memphis when he was a heel. You should have seen Ric Flair when he was a heel in the NWA. I feel like The Miz is that transcendent of a star in terms of heel wrestling. I think we're going to remember him as one of the great bad guys of wrestling when it's all said and done.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he's on that kind of, I guess in the Attitude Era, the great heel was Triple H, you know, in terms of as a wrestler, taking Vince out of the equation.
Yeah,
Triple H, the game, you know, and I do think that the Miz is almost reminiscent of that in a lot of ways. You know, that ability to do a long promo, a short promo, he's able to press buttons, say the right things. It's going to get heat from the crowd, get heat from the person on the other side of him. And at times, what he's going to say is going to be so entertaining, it's just going to go over and people are going to end up laughing and applauding it. This kind of the ability to play everything, you know, he's got that complete all-round quality. If The Miz wanted to be a tweener, he completely could, very comfortably. He chooses to be a heel, and that's the great thing about The Miz. He really wants to live that heel lifestyle in a lot of ways.
Yeah, he fully believes his style, and he kind of is now an A-lister. Really, the ironic thing was the A-lister thing was supposed to be ironic. It's like, you're not an A-lister, you're actually a Z-lister, a complete joke. And now he genuinely feels like an A-list talent. He feels like a Hollywood star in the WWE. And that's full credit to him. He's the guy who's grafted and worked towards that. Unfortunately, we're not actually, not everybody enjoys it as much. At Scotty Styles 29, the IC title with Jordan versus Miz is very uninteresting. I've got to think they'll put the belt on Jordan and he's going to go heel. I can't see Jason Jordan going heel. I don't think he's got enough charisma to do so. I think he's very slowly building a character, but if he's going to turn heel now, I think that's going to fall flat on his ass.
The only way he can turn heel is by turning on Kurt, because he's in there with a heel. He's beating heel. If he was in there against a face champion, he's going in as a face as well, then he could turn heel. But I think, how do you turn heel against a heel? It would have to be turning on Kurt. And I just think it's way too early in the kind of development of this storyline to do that. I don't think they're going to kill this storyline too quickly with the build-up that it had. I think that we're stuck with it for a little while yet, for better or worse.
Yeah, no question. So the rest of Raw was kind of fits and starts, really. A lot of much ado about nothing, other than the Braun Strowman and Brock Lesnar dynamic. I don't have a great deal to say. Normally, I'm enamored with Braun Strowman. I thought, once again, even with the minimal amount of content that he was given this week, he came across brilliantly. I don't think anyone's conveying their character and what they're about better than Braun Strowman. Even the intensity, the way he was looking at the camera, legitimately was quite terrifying. He legitimately came across as a monster. He's sitting there, he's glaring at it. He wants to hurt Brock Lesnar. He wants to destroy him. And the way that he instilled fear in Paul Heyman, and the way Paul Heyman conveyed that fear via the camera, was phenomenal work. It wasn't a knockout promo by any means, by either man, but it did a great job of selling it. My only critique is, of course, that once again, Brock Lesnar isn't there. Braun Strowman is. So Braun Strowman comes down and destroys Enzo Amore to thank you, Braun chance. Once again, Braun's getting applauded for knocking out an annoying dipshit, just like he was with Roman Reigns in their rivalry. And of course, Neville comes down to pick the bones, which we'll talk about later. And of course, on part two, when we discuss 205 Live. So Braun versus Brock, I've got to admit, I'm ludicrously excited about the match. I'm genuinely hyped. They've done a good job here, mostly on Braun's side of things. I am so thrilled for this match. I think this is the match I'm looking forward to most on that card, other than the Cruiserweight title match.
Yeah, I'm excited for it, but if it turns into a Suplex City match, or...
Oh, God.
Yeah, if Brock wins, and I think he's gonna... I think Brock's going to win because he's not got anywhere else to go now. His avenue out is somewhat closed off. So I think they'll keep the belt on him as long as he's available to stay in the WWE, unless there's some Goldberg-esque figure to come back and give the WWE a bit of a payday. I don't see that they'll put it on Braun yet. I really hope they do. I just don't think they're going to. And that detract somewhat from my interest. It stops me being as excited as I could be, because I've just got a feeling that they're going to have Brock win, and that's going to piss me off like nothing else.
At heel, Nick Payne, Braun train. That's literally all he submitted in terms of Braun, which is quite amusing, actually. I'm quite a big fan of it, so. Yeah, thank you for that interaction. The overriding thoughts, really, when it comes to Braun, are that he is just an amazing monster. I am a little bit concerned that they might cut his legs off at No Mercy, because after this, where does he go? Like, I mean, I guess this is one interaction. Yeah. I guess I'll ask you a question. Where does Braun Strowman go if he doesn't beat Brock Lesnar?
I think, well, it may be a long rivalry with John Cena, if Cena's sticking around. But other than that, it's difficult because you've not got too many, you know. Is Braun a face now? Because then you could maybe put him against someone like Samoa Joe when he's back from injury, with Joe being a heel. That would be great matches, but how do they, you know, I think it's about, it's almost a two heel dynamic in the way they are. I think
maybe that might be their get out. For No Mercy, maybe Joe comes back and attacks Braun. That would be a good way of getting, you know, Brock Lesnar gets out of jail because of what Joe does to Braun, and then going forward we can have 6 months of Joe versus Braun and, you know, me just furiously jerking it.
Joe versus Braun with some Brock involvement, and that allows Brock to be part-time.
Yeah.
You know, have those
take
two...
it to triple threat.
Yeah, have those two dueling it out to be the number one contender. to go and face Brock if the title was going to stay on Brock. I'm all right with that. You know, that's fine. And then, you know, as you say, take a triple threat rather than anything else. I'm bang on board with that. And then again, obviously, Roman Reigns has got to do something post Cena, especially if Cena's then going to be away for a while. So you've got the same four guys that we saw at SummerSlam who are going to be floating around after No Mercy with nothing clear in terms of a path for them going forward other than interacting with each other. So we're going to have to see someone break out from the pack to come and get involved if they want to freshen it up.
Yeah, I mean, that pretty much sums up Raw. So I'll just run down some interaction. So thank you very much to everyone who sent stuff in. At Heel Nick Payne, nobody calls me a nerd. Dean Ambrose channeling his inner Marty McFly, little bit happy that nerd is actually over. The Good Brothers are just that. Good Brothers, great on the mic and great in ring. As we mentioned, of course, the club earlier, the tag team division is getting hotter. And Dean Ambrose providing some comedic elements to the tag team rivalry with attacking Luke Gallows over the fact he was called a nerd. Also, how good is it that Luke Gallows has managed to get the word nerd over?
Absolutely amazing. I love the fact that we're basically going back to 1980s insults. It's great.
Yeah, no question. He also mentioned Curt Hawkins seems like a guy who's very happy with life, happy to be who he is. Wouldn't it be a nice world if we were all like Curt Hawkins? No, it would not. I thoroughly do not accept being a loser of Curt Hawkins' level. As far as this undefeated streak goes, it's got a reasonable amount of comedy, but it's not something that I want based on a storyline. I don't really care enough. He lost to, who was it, Apollo Crews? Nobody cared. Let's be honest. Nobody gives a flying shit. In terms of the women's division, boo, Bayley, she needs to heal up now, bless her. That's what At Heel Nick Payne said. And also, he's not the only one who mentioned this. At I Love Clee 216. Right, so Bayley got injured right around when I started getting involved with The Week in the Universe. You should all know, I'm a serious Bayley mark. Love her and everything she's about. Great to see her get a nice pop at home in San Jose. Now, please God, book her properly. She should be over at all times. Yes, you are obviously a large mark for Bayley, which I commend you for. Some people actually sent us messages saying that they were, just in general sort of Twitter conversation, people were complaining, saying that it was ridiculous that Bayley's been shoehorned into this match so quickly. Doesn't make for very believable booking that she comes down, helps the women take down Nia Jax, and is instantaneously walloped into it. I feel that these are the little things that are stopping Raw's women's division getting on a par with SmackDown's, because there is talent there. And there's great characters. Alexa Bliss is working her bollocks off. She's so funny, so good. I love her facial expressions, the fear in her eyes. The way she worked that match with Nia Jax, I would have actually been all right if they just had those two. That was a great match, the psychology of both women. And I tell you what, you could tell they're just good friends. And it's actually better when good friends wrestle, because I would imagine they understand each other's quirks and their nature better. And this showed in this match. These two clicked beautifully. I'm actually genuinely excited about seeing this as a rivalry. I like the fact that Alexa Bliss will go to any extreme to get away from her. I did like the fact that here comes obnoxious Sasha Banks, who's just going to start jumping through people from behind and, you know, stopping people getting away and things like that. So you just come across as a twatish heel, as far as I'm concerned. But the booking has been quite poor in places, and shoehorning Bayley in, I think, is a mistake. And also, it undercuts Emma even more. And I thought the whole concept of Emma being in this match was, hey, here's Emma's opportunity to shine. And then she goes on Twitter brilliantly and says, okay, so my reward for starting the women's revolution is by lowering my percentage, my chances of winning this match. And she has a point, because Bayley, frankly, was floundering as a face, more so because of shit booking than because of her mic work. Because she's not bad. She's not amazing, but she's not bad. And reality is, she comes back after this injury and walks straight into the title picture. Poor effort. Very poor effort. Especially if she's not even owed a title rematch. So it's not like you've got any kind of excuse to put her in there. I feel like you could just wait. And like you said earlier, Asuka tipping up before Bayley would probably be a good idea, especially if Asuka's going to be a heel, because then you could bring back super uber face Bayley and have them rival. But the problem is, when someone's so good like an Asuka, I think it's going to be hard to get over against her. I think that's going to be a real struggle for the women on this Raw roster, unless maybe they're going to put Paige in there as well and, you know, use someone like a Paige as the person who can possibly disarm Asuka down the line. But we wait with bated breath. Basically, that wraps up Raw, I guess. Decent Raw. What did you think of Raw this week?
Yeah, it was all right. A little bit disappointing as a go-home show. It's a solid Raw in its own right, yeah. But as the go-home show to No Mercy, it was a little bit underwhelming. It was a three genders for me.
Yeah, I feel if you take Roman Reigns' promo out of this, it's actually like a 1.5 or a 2 gender affair. So I would probably go with your assessment. 3 genders. It was fine, but for a go-home show, not good enough. I expect a lot better, and especially when you're going on. They really wanted to ramp up the fact, we've got 2 WrestleMania main events at No Mercy. It was like, really? So why are we getting Sunday Night Heat levels of entertainment on Raw? That's not good. Do better. With Raw out of the way, I believe it's time that we delve into the blue brand. Are you ready, sir?
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's jump headfirst in to SmackDown Live.
I will prove to you exactly why your destiny is to lose to the modern-day Maharaja.
You will never be as good as AJ Styles. It's not paranoia.
SmackDown Live this week. Let's kick it off with what we love most, women's wrestling. Charlotte Flair comes back. And I didn't care much for the stuff with Natalia, the crazy cat lady stuff, but I did like the fact that once again, do you know what? SmackDown has done this a few times, haven't they? Get all the women out there, you know, get Tamina out there, get Becky Lynch out there, get Naomi, get them all out there. And then build to a cracking match. And again, they've done that. The stuff, I was actually enjoying Natalia. The fact that she came out and said, oh, I'm glad you're here, Charlotte, because I want to dedicate this portion of the show to the great strong women around the world. And most of all, me. She's got that picture of herself. And I thought, that's great. That's absolute heel fair. Not executed perfectly, but absolutely good enough for the heel champion. And then everybody starts jumping on the crazy cat lady thing. Why are we building a gimmick based around the fact that she loves cats? Why does she have a cat t-shirt? She's wearing cat head things. Like, what the fuck? I have enough bullshit with my mum, who's a crazy cat lady. I don't need to watch this crap too. Like, what the fuck? Do you know what? It left a bitter taste in my mouth because I thought, that's your women's champion. I want more seriousness from your women's division. I feel like Natalia deserves better as well. She should be the shooter, the, you know, the sort of straight shooting wrestler. I'm from the Hart family. You know, I'm going to wrap you up like a goddamn pretzel and I'm going to tap you out to this infamous submission move. And instead we'll go, I'm not a crazy cat lady. Leave me alone. Like, that's too far stupid in the other way. But I digress a little bit. Charlotte Flair coming back is phenomenal. She looked so honest and humble. And I kind of forgot how much I missed her. She's amazing. She has an incredible presence. And you've said, to your credit, on this show before, that Charlotte is one of the most complete wrestlers, full stop. Not a women's wrestler, just a complete wrestler, full stop. She's arguably top 2 or 3 talents on SmackDown, period. And there's absolute validity to everything in that statement, because she stood there and not only did she look utterly beautiful, but she had a presence. She had a Rick, because I thought she was going to bring Rick out, maybe, because she seemed like she was kind of in that
building
kind of,
to that.
Yeah, I felt like she was in presentation mode.
Graphics.
You know, they were talking about
with
the
her and Rick. Yeah,
yeah, the graphics were Rick coming up. Yeah, I thought, is Rick going to come out and just have a quick wave and say, hey, I'm all good, guys, and thank you very much? Maybe, you know, Rick's not obviously good enough health to do something like that yet, and frankly, I'm grateful for that. I do not want to see that poor bloke shoved out there just for the sake of a little bit of a boost. But nonetheless, Charlotte, incredible, and I like the build to it. And of course, this led to the main event, which was a fatal four-way match for the number one contendership for Natalya's belt. So we've got Becky Lynch, we've got Naomi, we've got Charlotte, we've got Tamina with the ludicrously looking Lana, who is just jaw-droppingly scintillating in every sense. The match itself for me was amazing. What did you think?
Love the match. I thought it was great. I think this demonstrated, first of all, why Lana is better doing what she's doing now than she was trying to be a wrestler, because the fatal five ways that we were getting in which Lana was involved, we were kind of looking at it going, you know, there's something, she's detracting from the match overall, and the match is improved when she's eliminated. And now that she's kind of just on the outside as that kind of annoying heel manager persona, she's so much better in that role. She's so well suited to that, perfectly suited to that. So it's great for her to be back in that role, and that enhanced the Fatal 4-Way to a certain extent. Tamina looked great in this match as well. This is one of her far stronger showings
best match
than we've seen
on SmackDown Live.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't disagree with that. I thought she looked very, very strong. You know, she was really enjoyable, and that's what we want from Tamina. We want to see those levels consistently. You know, it's consistency that she now needs to bring to her in-ring performances. But it was just great to see them all out there and all putting on a match of that standard and of that quality that we know they're capable of delivering. Because what we've had in recent weeks is very much, it's been all about Kevin Owens. It's been all about AJ Styles, the US title and open challenge, you know, the Hell in a Cell build, Jinder and Nakamura. It's been great to get back to what SmackDown does best. And that is women's wrestling. Women's wrestling on SmackDown should be main event. It should be above Jinder Mahal as champion, as much as we love Jinder. It should be above the mid-card title when we're talking about the women's title. It should be main event on that show. It was great to see it back in the spot that it deserves to be in.
At TaylorR1114, Taylor Marie asks, are you happy with Charlotte winning the number one contendership? Do you see her taking the title off of Natty? And would you like to see Natty, or would you like to see Natty hold the title longer?
I'd always love to see Charlotte as champion, but I think considering the fact, and maybe it doesn't mean too much, but the fact they've released the WWE Starrcade card for November showing champion Natalya versus Charlotte in a steel cage match, that probably says to me that Natalya is going to retain at Hell in a Cell first. Obviously, these things can be subject to change, but I don't mind with Natalya getting a run. It's been long enough for her to get the title in the first place. It would be, you know, good to see her actually have a decent run with the belt. I think she's deserved that. I mean, what was it, 6-7 years between championship wins?
Yeah, it was a long time.
Yeah, so it would be good to see her kind of have a good run. She's earned it in that time. What do you think, by the way, of the return of Starrcade?
Yeah, I noticed this the other day. I thought, what? I thought they'd actually gone for the full pay-per-view experience. I was like, no, absolutely not. From what I hear, it's going to be a SmackDown Live special event. I don't know if it's going to be... I mean, if they've got any
possibly
sense at all, they'll put
special.
It on the network. Yeah, like, for God's sake, at least give it some platform, even if it's just like, hey, go on a network or what. Yeah, the card looks good. And also hints at some rivalries going forward. I've noticed you've got Ziggler versus Bobby Roode on there. Mm. There's
Rusev in the Kevin US Owens. Title picture.
Yeah, Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn, which is very interesting. Yeah, I know, right? I mean, it's obviously, it's one of those matches which is a good go-to.
You could just
it'd be interesting.
It out. Yeah.
Yeah, I get the impression that it's a one-off and they're not going to really involve storylines much. I think Nakamura versus Jinder is on there. So that's kind of like the going
that's in the cage
thing
as
right
well.
Now. But yeah, it feels like a glorified house show. Haven't they got something else in the cage as well? It's not just
Natalya
that, is
Charlotte.
It? Haven't they got? Yeah. Which
Natalya
is...
Charlotte is the cage match.
Yeah, I mean, Natalya and Charlotte. Like, the ironic thing about Natalya and Charlotte is that was Charlotte's first ever big match on NXT when Natalya came down to sort of help out the developmental side of things. And it's kind of nice that we've come full circle and they'll now get the chance to do it again. And I listened back to the Edge and Christian podcast with Charlotte on, and she was saying how her and Natalya just click so beautifully in the ring. So I am excited for that match. I'm not the only one who said that either at I Love 216 actually said that these two will be fantastic. This is a match that we can all get behind. And he also said that he thinks that Charlotte's the kind of wrestler who would do anything to get a match over. And I agree with that sentiment. She's just an incredible worker. She understands what kind of extreme you need to push to get your match to the level it needs to be. And I think that's half the reason the women's division is as good as it is. But Starrcade, it's just a bit of fun, isn't it? It's a bit of a shame because...
Good fun.
Yeah, it's just fun. But the only thing that's a shame for me is the fact that Starrcade, for me, was always regarded as... You know, it was WCW's WrestleMania, wasn't it? And yeah, I just feel like there are so many other things. Do you know what? I'd like to see Halloween Havoc. And especially as we're charging into October and it's going to be around the same time, that would have actually been quite a good time to strike with it and maybe experiment and see what people think. Because at the end of the day, they spend that money on those rights and they never really use any of them. They have Night of Champions sometimes and that, but they never seem to want to really acknowledge or use any of the stuff that they paid to have the rights for. Even when Sting came back, he never had his old WCW music. And I thought, you paid all that money, why not just use it? It doesn't seem to make any sense to me. So, yeah, it's just a bit of fun. I mean, I wouldn't want to dissect it too much. It'll be nice. Hopefully, they'll put it on the network. It's just an extra little thing to watch. And if you guys out there are listening, if you have any interest in Starrcade whatsoever, or maybe you want us to cover it as a quick, maybe, 20, 30-minute podcast as a one-off, get in contact with me, and we'll see if we can get something together for you guys. But let us know, nonetheless, what you think and whether you want Starrcade covered or not, or if you even have any opinions that you want aired on next week's show. Let me know, we'll shoehorn them in.
We'll have to chat about some classic Starrcade on Manic Mondays, maybe.
Yes, yeah, maybe you guys want to hear us talk about Starrcade's greatest matches. I know the match of the week for me this week was obviously a Starrcade effort from 1996, Ultimo Dragon, Dean Malenko. So, you never know. That got some good feedback as well on the Facebook page. People were very enamoured with that match, which is nice. So, nice to hear. But sticking with the blue brand of things, obviously, the women's stuff was very polarizing, and I'm glad that it took center stage at heel Nick Payne. Bless Natty, she's just awful on the mic. Naomi, too, both just awful. Yeah, Naomi isn't a case of she's bad on the mic. I think that they just give her the terrible, terrible stereotype lines, girl, I'm going to snatch you and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, there's enough racial problems with this show, as we'll get into in a moment. But he also said, Becky and Lana, on the other hand, are straight fire, bro. And I know exactly what you're referring to in that respect. Oh, and has Lana given up wrestling or was she just no good? To be honest, I think you know the answer to that question.
Bit of both. I think.
Yeah, I hate to be condescending to our reigning PvP champ, but to be honest, you know damn well that Lana was a pile of shit in the ring. So, and even when she was getting the opportunity, she had her legs cut off pretty frantically.
Oh, yeah.
Corbin's new music is a great song, but doesn't suit him. His old one was better. Really going for the heart of the topic when it comes to this storyline. go Dillinger. Love Ty getting the push. Hope he takes the belt in a triple threat at Hell in a Cell. Corbin has just fallen hard from the top. But his promo after was good. Actually pulled off whiny tough guy well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we've got this triple threat dynamic going on with AJ Styles, Baron Corbin, and Ty Dillinger. It feels like it's good for Ty Dillinger because he's getting something to do. Of course, Smiley was lamenting the fact that he wasn't used properly enough once again. She's obviously a very hard, hard fan of Ty Dillinger. And to be fair, no question, he should be used in a better light. Maybe this is kind of his level. I think Ty Dillinger is essentially a great mid-carder with a fun gimmick, and this is the right place to plonk him in. And let's be honest, you're always going to have great stuff with AJ Styles involved, but I almost feel that this is dragging AJ Styles too far into the mid-card at this point.
This is
kind of my hot take on here, is that AJ Styles is too good to be pissing a boot with fucking Baron Corbin and Ty Dillinger for too long. If needs be, get the belt off him. Or, maybe have him get injured at the hands of Baron Corbin. Ty Dillinger can use that to his advantage and maybe sneaks a win and gets that US title off of him. And then have AJ Styles go away for a bit and come back as a more main event contender again. Because maybe the reason that people aren't enjoying Jinder Mahal as champion as much is because he doesn't really seem to have any legitimate contenders. Nakamura is probably the most legitimate. Let's be honest, he's only really had two, hasn't he? Orton and Nakamura.
Oh, yeah.
And that's because people like AJ Styles are fecking about in the mid-card. Once again, Rusev's fucking around in this bullshit angle with Orton. There are guys out there who could be in the main event and leading the charge. And AJ Styles is the guy. He's the guy on SmackDown. He's the face that runs the place. He's the champ that runs the camp. He's the guy who knocked off John Cena. And here he is fucking around with Baron Corbin and Ty Dillinger and kind of standing there while the other two knocked seven barrels of shit out of each other and keep falling over each other at every opportunity. It just feels like a real mess.
Yeah, I'd like to see, you know, AJ Rusev to me is the ideal. That's how you elevate the mid-card title. At the moment, the mid-card title feels mid-card. And I think, you know, Rusev versus AJ Styles, that elevates the mid-card title in the way that AJ and Kevin Owens were doing just a couple of months ago. Or a month ago, even.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned Rusev. Nick Payne also mentioned Ruru got a squash against Randy. Yes. Rusev number one. I did like how Rusev was like proper hamming it up backstage. Let's hope Randy doesn't squash him at Hell in a Cell. Yeah, it's, do you know what, Steve, you were absolutely on the money last week. You mentioned the fact that you had heard that this was a device to try and give Rusev more of a opportunity at Orton down the line. That's why he fell so heavily at SummerSlam. And they repaid it in earnest, basically, on this SmackDown. They were like, here you go, have this cheap shit, very quick win over Randy Orton. Can we just give Randy Orton a break while we're here? Because I am just so bored of Randy Orton. Just take him off TV for 6 months or something. I don't care anymore. He literally, for me, he's the greatest wrestler I've ever seen who doesn't add anything to the product. For a guy this high up, for a guy to be this big a star and literally give you nothing is quite frankly ludicrous. Just shovel him out of the way. Give him a break. Go and fuck off and look after your kids for a bit and have a bit of fun. And please come back with a bit more fucking personality and a bit more fire. This might be systematic of a guy who's just always been there, but has always been in a comfort zone. So maybe he's got too safe and just, you know, he's quite happy to live within his means, which is absolutely fine. But The Miz has proven you can be that guy who plays it safe, does things professionally without going too over the top, and still be a world-class talent. So I don't want to hear your excuses, Mr. Orton. Rusev versus Orton, I don't care. I would have actually been happy if they just left it at that. But I feel that this is going to be dragged out as long as possible. Any interest in this match?
No.
Well said.
That's it.
No. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Short and succinct, because no, I have zero interest as well. I still think Rusev is the star in waiting. And waiting, possibly, to interfere with Jinder Mahal. I love Jinder Mahal. I can't defend this. This is terrible.
2 weeks.
It's utterly terrible. It's 2 weeks now. If it had just been the one, they said, no, that's fine. This whole, you're a racist. No, you're a racist is very strange, very uncomfortable. And now the crowd are really starting to get pissed. When the crowd are chanting, that's too far. Come on. Who's writing this garbage? Don't tell me that Jinder's going to the creative and saying, ha-ha, I should make a Mr. Miyagi joke. Fuck off. That's not, for me, that's not even racist. That's just feeble. Pathetic. And, oh, God, they're cringeworthy. Where's Nakamura in all of this? He's backstage. I will win championship. I'm falling asleep over here when Nakamura talks. And frankly, do you know what? Watching Jinder Mahal right now is the equivalent to watching somebody chat up a woman who's either completely out of their league or a woman that's just not interested and they think they have a huge opportunity with that girl. It's really uncomfortable to the point where you don't want to watch, but you do anyway. And you think, car crash. It's really awkward and cringeworthy. It gives me a bad vibe. And I think the premise is I'm showing you what it's like to be racist towards somebody because this is what these people are like. And then he keeps saying, doesn't he? Oh,
if you become champion, these people are going to treat you the same way. And it's like, yeah, but you can't lead with racism, then accuse everyone else of racism. Like, who thought this was a good idea? You finally got him out of the Randy Orton thing. We thought, excellent. He had a half-decent match at SummerSlam. He's improving day by day. He's working hard. And now they've just derailed all their efforts with these two bullshit promos. And the only real saving grace of them is the Singh brothers' hilariously comical overacting of every moment.
For me, it wasn't even the Mr. Miyagi thing that I thought was the most offensive. I know this one's got a lot of the headlines, because I think he used it as a, you know, they will call you Mr. Miyagi. So he kind of palmed it off on, you know, these racist people. This is an example of the racism they will use. For me, what's offensive is when he's doing like an impression of, you know, a Japanese person trying to speak English, you know. So that's what. We heard it kind of with the Godzilla stuff last week, and now it was kind of, you know, something about look, but saying it is rook and all of that kind of stuff just really is really uncomfortable. That's what I thought was the most, you know, kind of offensive and stupid shit that you can avoid. I think he could have got away with the Mr. Miyagi thing by saying these people will call you that, but that's, you know, it's the impressions that are unforgivable for me. That's where it's way too far. It's so unnecessary. There are better ways to draw heat than what he's doing it's just, I know that he's been doing it about race for a long time, but he's now looking at it from completely the wrong angle.
It feels like a guy who's close to losing his title and just thinks, fuck it, I'm going to derail it spectacularly. Yeah. It's very strange. I don't understand it. I don't get it, because nothing in his characters lent itself towards this attitude until last week. And I was like, what the fuck did I just watch? And then they followed up this week, and it doesn't help that there's a lack of interaction with Nakamura. At heel Nick Payne, the man who says you people are racist is actually a racist himself. Sorry, man. Jinder was... and he's going to get in trouble here. Barry Wong. And he's put in brackets, sorry. Ha ha ha. Yeah, for fuck's sake, Nick. You're supposed to be a champion. God damn it. Act like one. But then the ironic thing is, I could apply that exact same comment to Jinder Mahal.
Yeah, exactly. To Jinder, yeah.
You are the champion of this product. And you feel, for all intents and purposes, like the European champion of this product. You are very much with the lower to mid-card belt here. That's what it feels like. Like, even AJ Styles in this boring, stupid shoehorn angle with Ty Dillinger and Baron Corbin seems to be far higher up the card than you do. He feels like the afterthought of the entire show, and he is the WWE heavyweight champion. He has the belt of the entire company, and he is in a 5-minute bullshit segment with a couple of stooges laughing around him. It's terrible. It's utterly terrible. This is like light heavyweight title territory. It's just pointless on so many levels. And it breaks my heart, because I absolutely love Jinder Mahal. And I felt he was on the right track as the blandish but effective foreign heel. At least he was providing me with something. Now I'm just uncomfortable with the whole thing. I'm not enjoying it at all. And I wouldn't say get the belt off of him, but I think you've done too much damage now at this point. I don't think you can turn it back. Not unless you take the belt away from him and let him piss off for a while and then come back. I think you've done a really bad amount of damage here. And this felt like one of those moments that you're going to look back in 10 years' time on WrestleCrap and go, number two on stupid moments that SmackDown Live did on their DVDs when they finally can acknowledge all the stuff that they did wrong back in the day, like they do with WCW and the Monday Night Wars. I think this is going to be on there.
Yeah, it's just, as you say, it's just absolute stupid shit. I mean, it's not just down to Jinder. Obviously, he's been given this stuff. It's terrible booking. It's terrible creative. It's terrible writing he's been given. But by the same token, there has to be a point where he looks at it and says, I don't need to go down here. He's got to back himself to be able to draw heat against Nakamura, who's super over. Even if you're going to mock the facial expressions and stuff of Nakamura, which are camp and over the top, and, you know, they do look a bit silly and a bit stupid, that's fine. That's okay, kind of comedy heel stuff, if you want to go down that route and try that. You know, try wearing a slightly different hat. I am more than happy for you to experiment in that way. But to go down and be doing it racistly makes just no sense at all. And at some point you have to turn around and say, actually, no, this doesn't make sense. You know, even if it's not just from the point of I'm uncomfortable with it as a human being, which should be his first port of call, he should be able to sit there and say, this just doesn't feel like something my character would say. This doesn't feel like something my character would do, because it's too hypocritical to everything I've been doing and saying for the last 3 or 4 months. So that's where Jinder's to blame, is not basically standing up against fucking Road Dogg or whoever's giving him this crap and turning around and saying, no. No. Just no.
No. That kind of sums up this segment, no. Really. Yeah. Even I love Glee 216 said, I'm not a Jinder hater, but these promos are god awful. He's not getting any heat whatsoever. People just have lost interest. If anything, people are getting sour. They're getting angry. And we saw that in the reactions to the crowd. It's very, very disappointing. And frankly, that was kind of it for SmackDown, wasn't it? We had the Usos were on commentary during a New Day match. They provided a certain amount of light relief. If nothing else, I just enjoy hearing Corey Graves consistently battering Byron Saxton. Byron Saxton, very much the Dexter Kritchman to your Corey Graves. just a complete and utter toolbox in every sense. No, you don't get to get out of the cage yet. Shut your fucking mouth. Yeah, SmackDown overall. So thank you to the guys who sent in their points. I don't know what's... Once again, it was a filler show, wasn't it? And I think the biggest takeaway for me was the women were awesome. And like you said, they proved that they belong in the main event. Everything else seemed like filler. More teasing towards Mojo Rawley and Zack Ryder, which, yeah. There was no Fashion Files again.
No.
That's, what, 3 weeks running now? Maybe that's why they had them on 205 Live. Maybe they're going to have more interaction on 205 Live. I haven't watched 205 Live yet. I apologize. Crazy busy. So... yeah, just, you know, no Sami Zayn, no Bobby Roode. Dolph Ziggler did
Kevin Owens by satellite as well. You know, we didn't have after,
good promo.
Didn't have any Kevin Owens. Yeah, but we didn't have
Kevin
Owens there.
Promo, but very strange as well, because last week it was a big fucking deal. Big fucking deal. And to not really follow up with it other than Shane McMahon coming out and saying, yeah, I'm going to beat your ass.
I'm going to beat you up.
Yeah, like, very forgettable, actually, I thought. Like, the fact that nobody's mentioned it in the interaction says, oh, yeah, it wasn't great. Shane McMahon, do you know what? I think the moment was great, but I think overall, I feel this might be a bit of a dud unless they're going to go hell for leather and murder each other in that cell. But it needs to be a one-off thing and get it out of the way. And I actually don't want to see Shane McMahon going over Kevin Owens either.
I don't think Shane McMahon
is in a position where he should be at any point going over any talent, even a smaller talent. I want to see Owens snap and put him out of commission. I want to see Owens genuinely hurt him and then shoehorn Kevin Owens into the main event. Because let's be honest, he is basically the main event. I can't see anything other than this match closing the show.
It should close the show. But it would not surprise me if they still put the title at the top of the card. You know, kind of traditionally, that would be the case. I think it could go either way on that. I think for all of us watching, that or possibly the women's title match is going to be the main event. That's what we're all looking forward to.
Yeah, I think from a technical standpoint, I'm actually excited about that most. Obviously, I'm excited about the Usos in the New Day just because hopefully justice is going to
always
be restored.
Deliver.
Yeah, they always do. They always do. Although I'm getting real tired of the New Day real quickly. I mean, I've never been a huge fan, but please do more than just gyrate and act like a bunch of idiots. Like, there's so much more there.
I know, but they just have... I mean, they don't have great matches with everybody. Let's not pretend that they do. But they do have great matches with the Usos. And at the moment, it's only those two tag teams really in there. I actually think New Day could have really good matches with the Gable Benjamin tag team if they're given the opportunity and actually given the time to work a good match. That could be really, really exciting stuff as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. It's irritating as fuck.
Yeah, just 2 months jumping around and color and hey, Black John Cena's like, fuck off. Just irritating. Well, like
they're almost white John Cena's, aren't they? In it to a certain extent.
Yeah, that for me is what Vince McMahon sees a black person as.
Yeah, that's what I think as well. Just think it's a caricature, it's like, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like, my God, Carl Singer's and God, gotta know with that church vibe and Aretha Franklin. Like, just all that it's kind like, of it's stuff. Like, and
it's like he stumbled across an episode of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and went, that is amazing. Let's put that in a tag team.
Basically, I just feel like he's only just got a copy of the Blues Brothers and has seen the stuff with James Brown and the church and everything and thought, yeah, that seems like a good idea. Put that in. It just, Xavier, to be fair,
Xavier
to
Woods
day,
is now, Xavier Woods sorry, is now Colton Banks. As, no, he's Colton Banks as far as I'm concerned. That's all I'm going to refer to Xavier Woods as now is Colton Banks. If he doesn't do the Colton dance at some point, I'm going to have to drive to find Xavier Woods wherever he is and punch him in the taint because that would be incredible TV, quite frankly.
Yeah, absolutely, no question. I think we'll wrap it up there. What did you think of SmackDown overall, mate?
Three genders, mate. Same as Raw to an extent. It was fine, but it was filler, and it feels like it's waiting for something better to come along. It feels like in a bit of an in-between show after big, big show, big impact last week. It was like they had to rein it in and think, hang on, we've still actually got quite a few weeks before a pay-per-view, so we need to slow this shit down.
Yeah, if I separated the women's stuff, that was 4 to 4.5 genders for me, 4 genders on a Bollywood boy. But if you take the women's stuff away, I actually thought it was around 2.5. So I'd probably go with 2 genders on a Bollywood boy. It was so middle of the road, not a great deal going on. And for me, if it wasn't for the women's stuff, I would have had very little to zero interest in what was going on in this SmackDown. So, you know, it was entertaining for a casual watch, but nothing that I'm ever going to remember or write home about. So before we wrap up this show, we didn't put out a Wrestlers As poll. And there's a reason for that, because this weekend, of course, is No Mercy. So this is your last call. Well, we'll mention it on part two of Week in the Universe. This is your last chance to really, really pay attention to what we're putting out there. So, of course, with a pay-per-view being this weekend, that means that it is Smart Plugs Pop Vinyl Predictions. Essentially, what we're looking for, we want everyone who's listening, anyone who's getting involved, send a DM to the Twitter account at the Smart Plug and tell us who you think is going to win every match in No Mercy. Now, for a tiebreaker, we need to know who you think is going to get pinned in the women's title match. Of course, this is a Raw pay-per-view, so check it out. The match listing is on our Twitter right now. You can also get it, obviously, by just simply going to the Wikipedia page. There are 7 matches in total, but we also need that tiebreaker as well, guys, because that is quite crucial. If you don't send us one in, then obviously we're not going to include that if we need it. So someone might win by default. So please get that tiebreaker in as well. DM the account. It takes you 2 or 3 minutes to pick who you think is going to win. And the reality is that the winner is going to get a free pot of vinyl on us. So with that being said, it's now time for us to put out our predictions. Dickhead Dexter Critchman. I shall repeat my predictions for Dexter Critchman's sake on part two. But as this is obviously the last port of call for my good friend Steve before No Mercy, I thought we'd give him an opportunity to throw his predictions out there. Obviously, our predictions will be in the hat too. You will have the opportunity to pit your wits against us as well as all of the fellow listeners. It's a bit of fun. It's a bit of interaction. And obviously, we have some one-on-one prediction matches that are actually coming in too, as we mentioned last week. There's kind of our own little pay-per-view build, our own sort of Smart Plug pay-per-view kind of thing. It's all in good jest, all in good fun. Get involved and, you know, interact with people and, you know, just get the conversation going a little bit. You never know who you might make friends with or who you might make enemies with. You really don't know. So with that being said, it is a pay-per-view this weekend. So let's put in the obligatory, awful new generation metal music and crack on. No mercy. No Mercy 2017. So, Steve Neal, let's get down to it. The Miz, yep, with the entire Miz Taraj, faces Jason Jordan for the Intercontinental Championship. Who do you have?
Going the Miz. Miz, I will not have the Miz lose the Intercontinental title. I'm going with the Miz. Too early for JJ.
Yep, I completely agree. I have the Miz too. Alexa Bliss, the women's champion, defends her belt against Sasha Banks, Bayley, Nia Jax, and Emma in a fatal five-way match. Non-elimination, one pinfall to a finish.
I'm going for Alexa Bliss to retain. I think spawny heel champion will find a way to win this. So I'm going Alexa Bliss.
A part of me feels that Nia Jax might do this.
I hope so.
That's kind of what my heart says. But I'm going to agree with you again. I think Alexa Bliss is going to get out of dodge here, mostly because of the egos of the other women. I think that's what's going to give Little Miss Bliss the opportunity to break away here and sneak a win. Because the idea is that there's absolutely no way that she could possibly overcome these odds. I'm leaning towards Alexa Bliss at this point. Neville, the Cruiserweight Champion, defends his title against Ratface Knacker Enzo Amore.
I refuse to back Enzo Amore. It has to be Neville. I will be perpetually outraged if Enzo Amore gets the win, so it has to be Neville.
I swear to God, and I'm not even going to echo this sentiment. You are, do you know what? I've threatened you before on this podcast, Vince. If you even contemplate putting that belt on that disgusting fecal matter that is that rat-faced, tartan-wearing toss piece, Enzo Amore, I am going to shove a banjo so far up your ass that your entire existence from there on in will be you farting and sounding like the malfunctioned-faced kid off of Deliverance. Do you understand me, you sweaty little twat? I will not accept Enzo Amore as champion. That being said, I will pick Enzo Amore. Because yes. WWE are a bunch of dickheads at their core, and I know that everything leans towards Neville twatting him, and for that exact reason, like, it's been so one-sided, that I get the impression that unless they're going to thoroughly punish him and he's going to get buried, that Enzo Amore is going to sneak some ludicrous win here and the internet is going to break down under the ferocity that is my rage. So yeah. I'm utterly disgusted by it, but I am going to pick Enzo Amore.
I do like the idea of a banjo being inside the anus of Vince McMahon so that his farts sound like a Mumford and Sons album. I think that's an outstanding premise.
I just like the idea of him getting in an elevator with, like, Stephanie and Triple H. I was like, so what do you fancy? Oh, excuse me, old Bowen. Ding, 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 ding. Just like Burt Reynolds poking his head around the corner, like, what's going on here then? Fruity as glorious. Fuck. Very much Bobby Roode. Finn Balor versus Bray Wyatt in a faces only match kind of thing.
Human versus human.
Yes. No demons involved.
No demons involved. I'm going to go with Finn because he has to win on the basis that if he can only win as the demon, then it cuts the legs off normal Finn Balor. So I have to go with Finn because it doesn't make any sense. However, it's one of those where both guys kind of need the win. They need the momentum. They're both drifting a bit, but I'll go with Finn Balor.
Drifting, you say? What a chance for Elias to make himself involved in this match.
Would you like to walk with Elias? Indeed, I would.
Yes. Yeah, it's not down an alleyway, though. Finn Balor versus Bray Wyatt. Talk about a match I could give zero shits about.
Yeah, awful build.
Bray Wyatt, if he loses this, looks shit. He's already lost the big match at SummerSlam. But then, like you say, if Finn Balor loses, he looks like the twat who can't win without the demon. And, oh God, this is a horrible match to pick. Normally I'd be like, ha, Finn Balor with just an absolute dollar. But how far are they going to drag this out? If this is going to go another pay-per-view, maybe, then I could quite easily see... I don't know. I get the impression there's going to be a bigger payoff than just, ha, you haven't got your face on. I'm going to stick my neck out and say Bray Wyatt with the assumption that they're going to go with a rubber match, maybe a steel cage match, maybe something a bit darker. Hell in a Cell might have actually benefited these two if they could go full dark, so it's a shame it's a SmackDown pay-per-view, but I'm going
to
stick my neck out and say Bray Wyatt.
TLC to come, so maybe something.
Yeah, you've got TLC, so there's loads of opportunities for gimmick matches there. You know, chairs matches, ladder matches, whatever you need. Maybe these two are going to beat the shit out of each other in some sort of
good old-fashioned table match.
Yeah, something just to kind of punctuate the rivalry. So I'll stick my neck out and say Bray Wyatt, because the only real win he's got of note was on Raw.
Gold Dust.
Yeah, maybe Goldust is going to turn on Finn Balor at No Mercy. It's a stretch, but he seems to be more involved.
Maybe he's going to go back to his TNA roots and start being the child molestering invader.
Oh, right. I thought you were going to go for the Black Rain. That's just fucking weird shit. Yeah, the Child Molester thing was 7, wasn't it, from WCW?
Yeah. That was it, not TNA. Black Rain was actually quite interesting.
Yeah, don't tell him that. He'll block you on Twitter immediately. He hates Black Rain because he was ballooned off his tits.
He was.
So if you like tweet him and say, oh, I really like Black Rain, he will immediately block you. It's quite... quite unsettling and also quite hysterical in the same way. Yeah. Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins defend their tag team titles against The Bar.
I don't really care, actually, who wins this, to be honest, because it's fine. It's not that it's terrible or anything. It's just doesn't really matter who the tag titles are on. I'll probably go with a Shield. Everyone loves a good old-fashioned babyface win, so I guess I'll go with the Shield just because I don't care and I might as well.
Yeah, this has got great match, nothing else going on written all over it. I'm going to say the Shield because I feel like the club are building something, and especially being heels, it's going to be a bit stupid if they go after Cesaro and Sheamus. So as much as I want The Bar to win, and they've just got a new t-shirt, and I actually quite like The Bar, I'm getting on board with the gimmick. I like the fact, hey, we're just two heavyweight bruisers. I also enjoyed their little throwback promo that they did on Raw. I actually thought it was mildly entertaining. The Shield. I just can't see anyone other than The Shield winning. I feel that Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins' little reunion tour needs a bit more length, and I think... the club would benefit more from taking the titles off of those two, because as much as I love Sheamus and Cesaro a lot more than I do Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins, I feel that Ambrose and Rollins have more of a rub to give in terms of star quality. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the Shield. In the dream match, John Cena takes on Roman Reigns.
Oh, Reigns. Like I said earlier, it's got to be Roman Reigns. It makes no sense for Cena to win and then fuck off for however many months doing movies. A movie promotion for his new animated film about a cow. So I don't see that we're going to get too much Cena over the coming months. So for him to go out on a victory over Roman Reigns, who is going to be there for that entire time, near the top of the card, you would imagine, makes no sense. So it has to be a Roman Reigns win and Cena leaving for a while to evaluate himself and his career choices, possibly returning at WrestleMania to face Roman Reigns again. Money.
Yes, money. I'm going to go with Roman Reigns as well. It will be catastrophically stupid to have John Cena win this match, especially as Roman Reigns is the guy who turns up to work every week. And go figure, WWE, the one time I'm starting to get on board with Roman Reigns, they cut his fucking legs off. I dread to think what they have planned for this match. Outside premise, maybe Samoa Joe attacks Roman Reigns. I'm not entirely sure after the match he attacks him if that isn't going to happen in the main event. I don't know why, but I get the smell of shenanigans here. Something is going to happen that is going to wind somebody up, because these two men have a habit of being involved in shit-eating moments that piss people off. And just in WWE fashion, I just don't see it being the match that everybody's expecting it to be. I'm worried they're going to do something dumb here. But I'll go Roman Reigns, because Cena winning clean or in any fashion would be ridiculous. And in your main event of No Mercy, it is Brock Lesnar, the Universal Champion, defending against everybody's favourite big man, Braun Strowman.
Yeah, I think Brock's going to win because he's still hanging around, or it's going to end in some form of no contest. And I can't choose which one. I can see it ending a bit like the Braun Cena match did last week on Raw, where it kind of ended in a disqualification. That wouldn't surprise me even. Obviously, that actually plays into the hands of Brock, and I'd quite like that if Brock went cerebral and just wound Braun up to the point where he got himself disqualified so that he can walk away with the title, you know, and kind of extend the rivalry that way. I'd actually be on board with that. But by hook or by crook, I figure that we're going to have a Brock win in terms of the fact he's going to walk out with the title. Maybe get himself disqualified. I'd enjoy that as well, actually.
Yeah, in a first for our predictions, I'm actually going to predict what I think will happen, and I think it's going to be no contest. I think Lesnar winning clean over Braun Strowman stops Braun Strowman's momentum too quickly. I also think that there's more money involved here, and yeah, that this rivalry should go more than one match. And for me, I remember Ryback and John Cena. It's not a great, you know, comparison because this is far better, but the same kind of principle applied there. It was a big champion who hadn't lost in God knows how long. And the guy facing him, obviously in Ryback in that premise, you know, should have been theoretically capable of destroying him, but they needed to drag it out so that they could have more matches. So I'm going to say no contest as an actual prediction. I'll put that out there. So if one guy wins or the other guy wins, then I'll lose that prediction. My prediction is a no contest or a draw of some kind, whether that be double count out, double disqualification, something like that, because there is no gimmick here. And I find it surprising that they're just going to have a straight match and be done with it when the whole build up to this has been, look at me, I can fucking destroy you with chairs and tables and everything else at my disposal. If I was fantasy booking, I'd have Braun Strowman destroy Lesnar in the same way that Lesnar destroyed Cena a couple of years ago at SummerSlam. Have him just run him over and win the title, and it just completely reassesses Brock Lesnar, and he has to come back months later as this unhinged beast who cannot contemplate what happened to him. But I don't think WWE has the interest or the long-term sense to do something like that. I just hope that we're going to have some sort of long-term rivalry out of this. Depends really on Samoa Joe as well, because as I mentioned earlier, I quite fancy Samoa Joe to interject in his match and maybe cost Braun Strowman a match, and that's what leads to a Joe Strowman rivalry. Because other than that, what really can you do with Braun Strowman? He's too big built now to be taken away from the main event. It would actually be very, very sad and very, I don't know, I just think it would be very damaging to the product if you said to Braun Strowman, here's your title match, now fuck off back down to the mid-card. Not a good idea. He needs to be running someone over, even if that's, you know, going back to someone like a Cena or a Reigns. But the problem is we've had too much with Reigns, so yeah, going forward, I don't think we could really go back to the well on that. So yeah, I'm going to go with no contest or a double count of sorts. Essentially, some form of draw is my prediction for this match.
Yeah.
So that wraps that up. And as I said, ladies and gentlemen, if you want the opportunity to get a free pot vinyl on us, then the only opportunity to do that is by sending in your predictions. So if you are listening, please go to @thesmartplug and click on that little message icon and DM me your predictions for all of the matches that we just run through. And then also as a tiebreaker, we need to know who you think is going to get pinned in the women's title match. It will take 2 minutes of your time and you will have an opportunity to win a free pot vinyl. Of course, only one person can win it. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, we also have the mini competition running at the side. A WWE t-shirt is up for grabs. A WWE t-shirt of your choice is up for grabs. If you write a review on iTunes, we're already getting some iTunes reviews now. Thank you very much to everyone who's written reviews for us. They're very well appreciated. The majority of them are actually 5 stars, which is very kind of you. And like I said, if you write an iTunes review and you send me some form of proof of it, obviously I'll try and work my way through them. But if you can send me a screenshot or something showing me your subscription to the podcast and obviously your iTunes review, you will be in the hat for that free WWE t-shirt, and that draw will take place likely before No Mercy. So obviously you've got until Sunday to do both of these, but as far as your predictions go, I need them by Saturday night, guys. I had a little bit more leeway last time, but because of the graphics and because I'm going to be at the NFL this Sunday and I'm going to be quite busy, your predictions have to be with me by Saturday night, absolute latest. Anything after that will not count. I'm very sorry, but you have been forewarned. So if you want to take part in Smart Club PvP, get them in by Saturday night. And I will accept American time. So basically, if I've woken up Sunday morning and I don't have them, they don't count. I'm afraid that is the cutoff point, guys. So I think that's pretty much a good place to wrap it up. All the social media links are in the podcast description, so I won't bore you to tears with all of that stuff. The Twitters, the Facebook pages, our friends at Mike's Open Journal and Taylor Talks, they're both on there. And good news, ladies and gentlemen, I was actually a guest on Mike's Open Journal this week. That podcast will be dropping next week. Check it out if you have any interest in mental health or you want to know more about me personally, my backstory, my background, and what went down with me and what led to my issues and my struggles with mental health. So that podcast will be available next week. Hopefully you'll enjoy that and let us know if you are listening. And please subscribe to Mike's Open Journal if you have an interest in that kind of topic, because it is one of the leading podcasts as far as we're concerned in this country for mental health. It definitely shines a light on something that's very important to me and very important to millions of people around the world. Let's get the discussion going and let's talk about what's going on in terms of mental health. But I digress. Check out all the social media links, of course. Obviously, Steve Neal has a Twitter as well, at SteveTheDuke87, so you can challenge him on many things. Perhaps Kyle Wilkinson would like to explain why he can't decide whether Steve or Dexter is the premier co-host. You, sir, are in trouble.
Kyle. Kyle, we need to have a talk, Kyle.
Oh, brilliant. I can't wait for that interaction. Or to Kyle's who listened to that. I'm sorry, Steve. I didn't mean to do anything. I'm so sorry, boss. I'm not sure he'd be doing it in the Canadian voice from South Park. Yeah, I'm just kind of thinking that, like him as like Michael Clark Duncan. I'm sorry, boss. utterly petrified of the wrath that is coming your way over such a terrible.
I'm very calm, hey. I'm
good, man.
Dexter is doing a very, very good job. Not great job. I'm doing a fucking great job, but he's doing a good job. You know, it's standard. It's average. It's good. It's fine.
It's mediocre at best, let's be honest.
He's doing
and,
fine.
And with this Sunday coming, the first in the best of seven series, we be sweeping up in here. It's going to be 4-0. You know why? Because you're a piece of shit, Dexter Critchman. I am going to make you cry in front of your own loved ones. And when it's all said and done, you will watch me rise as the greatest host of them all. Your freedom is on the line. Let's see if you have any nuts whatsoever, you worm. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to this. Yeah, I know, right? Such an uplifting end to this wonderful podcast. As I said, check out all our social media links and everything in the descriptions of every one of our podcasts. Please go and subscribe to the Facebook page. And don't forget, of course, at the Smart Plug for everything we do, including all the polls for Manning Mondays, etc., etc. Steve Neal, thank you very much for joining me for part one of Week in the Universe this week.
No problem, mate. Thanks very much. And obviously, we send out our Best wishes, our prayers, our sympathies and condolences to the family and friends of Bobby the Brain Heenan. Wrestling has lost a true great this week. And obviously our thoughts are with him. I'm sure we'll be talking about him more on Manic Mondays next week. But our obviously we couldn't go with talking about WWE this week without mentioning Bobby the Brain Heenan in some small way. But thanks for having me on, mate. And look forward to a bit of Manic Mondays chatter.
Yes, I completely echo your sentiments on the Brain. One of the greatest voices of my youth, someone who will be sorely missed. I hope you rest very well, my good friend and good brother. And we obviously send out our wishes and condolences. I echo Steve's sentiments. Our love and prayers to everyone who is close to Bobby the Brain Heenan and his family, his friends. We hope you can find some sort of closure. And hopefully WWE is going to do right and, you know, continue with the excellent tributes to him. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening. Obviously, keep an eye out for part two of Week in the Universe, which will be your last stop on the road to No Mercy. And as far as we're concerned, I think that's time to say be safe, look after yourselves, take care out there. Our thoughts and prayers with everyone involved in Mexico now. It is a terrifying time to live in this world. Mother Earth is furious. At the end of the day, the reality is we just want everybody to be safe. And if you're listening to this and you're affected by it, you know, if there's anything we can do to help and get you in contact with the right people or whatever, do not hesitate to contact us. We will do our utmost to help out, even if it's just giving you a limited amount of entertainment via this podcast or on the Periscopes, the Twitters and everything in between. But please look after each other, be safe, and we will catch you very soon for another podcast from the Smart Plug Network.
Well, folks, we're all out of time. This is Johnny Gomez saying good fight, good night.